Well, it was pretty popular.
Because you said not to just accept the first ones that come up, so I'm looking for some of the dedicated websites.
Okay, well, Allie has some things. Allie, would you read out loud what you have?
Although farmers took up arms in states from New Hampshire to South Carolina, the rebellion was most serious in Massachusetts, where bad harvest, economic depression, and high taxes threatened farmers with loss of their farms. The rebellion took its name from its symbolic leader, Daniel Shays of Massachusetts, a former...
Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Sorry, former captain in contingent army.
Very good, Allie. Yes, Yamaza.
I know it's not this, and it was probably not this, but I just found what she just said, and I thought economic depression, and I was thinking, is that like the Great Depression? And if so, technically, it would be their fault completely because they were the people in power were behind the Great Depression, and that is affecting the citizens, and then the citizens aren't able to pay the taxes that the people said that they were supposed to pay. And then they're saying that they have that.
Okay. All right. Well, this is, again, thank you both for reading it, Allie, and it's a good guess. Except for it's important, it's not a correct guess, though it's partially true. The part that's not true is this is nowhere close to the Great Depression. All right? This, let's just do a little history lesson. Y'all stay with me here. Jabari, don't worry about it. If you haven't found anything, what Allie has is enough, at least right now. Okay. When was the Declaration of Independence signed? Of the white people in this country becoming independent of British control.
You said the what?
The date that the Declaration of Independence was signed, which is July 4th, 1776.
Okay, and type it in the text chat. So that's just a basic history piece that you all need to know, okay? All right, so that's when the Declaration of Independence was signed.
All right, now, find out when the Constitution was created. And I'll be right back. See ya.
Microphone
music. So what section is this on? Like, which one is it?
It's on what?
Is it still elite manipulation of economy, or is it economic powers, psychology, and economic?
I feel like it's a bit of psychological, economic side connection.
Microphone activated.
Okay, so your mother says 17. Put by what that is. So if that's 1789 is when United States Constitution. That's great.
Yeah, he said Constitution. And also, what section are we on? Because I need to know what part to extend.
This is in the elite controlled economy. I just want to give you a little bit of context for it so that we can, like, literally slide from the beginning of the country all the way to, 2008, we'll make some stops back and forth later on. But this is so that you understand how the particular conflict of the elite control, manipulating the economy is built into the formation of the country. All right. So to understand the story, you got to understand the white people in that were colonists. All right. Sent out from, England and, here, cause there was others sent out from Spain and other places. And so there was this rebellion of the British colonists against the British government. And, crystallized in the Declaration of Independence, correct?
Right.
All right. Now, Yamazin and Allie, you got to know this. So put in the text chat. So you got it clear. That's July 4th, 1776. So most times when America on July 4th celebrates Independence Day, that's the celebration of when the United States declared its independence. Okay? July 4th, 1776. That is not when the country was founded. Okay? That is not when the U.S. Constitution started. Okay? A Declaration of Independence is just that.
Suppose you say to your parents, you know what? I'm tired of being here. I'm tired of being under your rule and authority. I am here for, therefore, I am now 17 in the state of Georgia. I can be on my own. Or I'm whatever. You say, I'm going to be independent. I am making a declaration of my independence. And then that would be your declaration of independence. You could say it out loud or you could put it on a piece of paper. You all with me so far? Okay, good. Now you have to decide how you're going to govern yourself, right?
Right.
So you're no longer independent. They say, okay, fine, go. Or you leave and, you know, without their permission. Whatever it is, you're gone. Now you have to decide how you're going to govern yourself. How you're going to make money, how you're going to feed yourself, what are going to be the rules for you. So in a similar way, the country had to decide how it was going to govern itself. All right. And so if the Declaration of Independence was 1776, then when was the first Constitution? Notice the Constitution is how many years later? Come on, Alan. Come on, Yamazin. How many years later? You got the two dates right in the text chat, Yamazin.
It's 1789 versus 1776.
Not versus, minus 1776. You left your parents' house on and made a Declaration of Independence. Was that the same thing as you having decided how you're going to run your own house?
13 years.
Okay, so 76 would be 86. That's right. So 13 years later, you get the Constitution of the United States. Okay? All right. So now what's happening in between those times? You have, she said is, okay, there's a Continental Army. So that means, you know, folks are figuring out how to govern themselves, okay? I'm not talking about we, because we're still in captivity during this period, okay? For the most part. This is white people trying to decide how they're going to govern themselves, all right? And continue to control us. But let's look at these 13 years in order to get Shay's Rebellion and begin to get the story of the elite. Look up the Articles of Confederation. And look up also, when did the war end between Britain and the colonists?
What was the second thing you said to look up? I got the first.
When did the war end between the British and the colonists? That is, the colonists said, we're independent of you. You know, it's like if you tell your father, listen, I'm not paying attention to y'all, and I'm not staying in this house, and whatever. And he like, you know what? I ain't going along with that. Not until you're 18 or to whatever. And just went and grabbed you up. You know, then you may, you know, run away again or whatever. But then the British wasn't like, oh, y'all don't want to be with us no more. They said no. So there was a fight. That was called the U.S. Revolutionary War. Okay. When was the war over?
It says, I see 1766.
Okay, Allie, how can it be 19 anything? Was that a typo? Allie, talk to me, sister.
That was a typo.
Okay, so give me the correct time, okay? All right, so Yamazin, what is that? And y'all, when you put the date in, just put a little bit of stuff behind it. So when you're going through these as notes, you'll know what that stands for. What's
1766? It was the end of the British and Colonies War.
Wait. Now, the Declaration of Independence was 1776. How are you telling me the war, the Revolutionary War? I'm not talking about any war. I'm talking about the Revolutionary War. The War of Independence. Oh. Yes, Javar?
So you're talking about the Revolutionary War.
That's what I said, the Revolutionary War.
Okay, I heard British and Colonist War. That's why I was having trouble finding stuff for it.
Well, the Revolutionary War was a war between the British government and the colonists.
Right. Okay.
September 3rd, 1783.
All right, I got you. So the war started in 1775, and then a year later, there was a Declaration of Independence in 1776, and then in between 1776 and 1783, how many years? How many years was the Revolutionary War being fought? Where the colonists was fighting for their independence from Britain. How many years? Just do the subtraction.
8 years?
Okay, so 8 years. All right, so now the war is over, because even though there was a Declaration of Independence in 1776, if they don't win the war, the Declaration of Independence means nothing, right?
Right.
All right, so the Declaration of Independence was just that. We declare we're independent. And British says, no, we don't see about that. So they fight the war for 8 years, okay, and or seven more years, and the Americans win the military war, or the white colonists win the war. Not that there weren't some black people to fight in the war. We did fight in the war for our freedom. We didn't fight in the war for America. Y'all do know that, right?
Uh-huh.
If you don't, just put the note in. We can't, because that's another history class. But that is, many of Africans, basically, here's what happened. George Washington, and was the general, and the British said, anybody who's in captivity, if you fight for the British, we will give you your freedom. And they said, we said, yo, I'm for that. And then, seeing the results of our fighting, George Washington reluctantly said, because they were also losing, that we will extend that same deal to, Africans. And so Africans joined Peter Salem, Salem Poor, to fight in the Revolutionary War. Now, people who don't know the truth say they were fighting for America. They were fighting for we were fighting for our freedom. Got it?
Uh-huh.
We had no fantasy that once we fought, then we would be accepted and all that stuff like that. Okay? Because we were being treated the same way by, they were all white folks to us, treating us poorly. I don't mean there weren't some individual people. At the same time, the rules, the government, all that. All right. And many times. So anyway. So now, you got these 8 years. So now the war is over. Now when you really have to say how the white folks who are left here, the colonists, have to say how you're going to govern, how they're going to govern themselves. That's 1883. So now, in the Articles of Confederation, Jabari said, was 1777 to 1781. Okay? And you might as well be clear, we fought on both sides. We fought on the British side, and different ones of us fought on the colonist side. There was no America at that time. Okay? You don't get America until you get first this Articles of Confederation, and then that's replaced. Okay. So now you have these Articles of Confederation, 1771 to 1781, because you're saying you got to raise money after the Declaration of Independence, so the British are not going to give you money. So you're raising the money to fund the war. And after the war, the farmers, there's an economic depression. And the farmers who were fought in the war hadn't been paid, many of them, by the government. At the same time, the people who ran the elite who sold the farms began to have the courts enforce payment of debt. Well, folks didn't have the money to pay the debt.
they hadn't been paid from fighting in the war, and there was a depression after the war. But the elite wanted to enforce, have the courts enforce the debts to take these folks' farms. And they began to rebel. And so, then the elite decided that we need another document. We need this particular government that we have under the Articles of Confederation was too democratic. We need a government where the elite would still stay in charge, okay? Because they wanted the courts to continue and the apparatus of the government, the police, the courts, to do the elite bidding. And that couldn't happen legally under the Articles of Confederation as well. So they didn't have what was organized to put down this rebellion. Now, this rebellion was essentially not trying to take over the government. It's like, but we're not going to pay. We're not going to go for our farms being foreclosed on under these circumstances. It's unfair. That's what the white farmers are saying. Yes?
What were those circumstances again? Can you repeat that, please?
Sure. Let me pull up a piece here so I can also give you something. Good old Shady's Rebellion. Well, number one, while I'm looking for what I laid out, is they had the farmers were also the people who had fought in the war. Right?
Okay.
And the farmers hadn't been compensated for fighting in the war, many of them. Okay? That makes sense? That's one condition.
So the farmers fought in the war.
Yes, and hadn't been compensated. Because if they're compensated, then they can pay their bills, right? Or better pay their bills. They hadn't been well compensated or fully compensated. And so as a result of that, and then there was also economic depression. All right? And you know what I mean by economic depression?
Yeah.
Right. That is, there was no, think about it. You just fought a war. You borrowed money to fight in the war. Okay. And when you're fighting in a war, you don't have regular means of production. And the people that you were fighting against certainly mainly are the ones who owned and controlled many of the things. It's like if you, again, let's go to the analogy. You left your parents' house. Now you're not used to paying rent, paying for the heat, paying for the food, paying for the electricity, paying the cell bill. You're not used to doing that. So after you declare independence and break free, if they try to resist, are not you going to go through an economic depression? Hello? Join me? Do you think you were going to have an economic depression?
Yes. Since all the resources are going towards the war.
And when you, even if you win the war, you don't have resources. You go out to your mom. Again, let's stick with the analogy because I'm going back and forth between that and something you can also relate to. You leave your parents' house. When you first leave your parents' house to be independent, are you going? Do you expect to experience an economic depression?
Yes.
Allie, you buzzing? If you can say no if you don't. I'm not saying you have to. I'm not trying to get you to agree with me. I just want some conversation so we can get some understanding.
Well, let me see.
Say what, Allie?
I said David.
You said no. Okay. Why?
Because I'm not going to leave my mom's house until I'm in economically ready.
Okay. That's unless she puts you out. But okay. So if you were great. So yeah. In your situation, fine. You're not gonna leave before you're economically ready. That is before you have a job, before you have whatever. What I suggest is even when you do all of that, if you have never paid all the bills, doesn't mean you're not going to survive, but a hunch, you're going to go through an economic depression. That is, the amount of extra income you'd have, for example, is going to go down when now you have to spend money to pay bills that you never paid before. So that may never happen to you. That's what happened to the colonists, right? Now they got to pay bills that they didn't pay before. Do y'all understand that? When you form your own government, you have to pay for everything. Okay, your government, your whatever. Okay.
This is still on the farmers, right?
This though, the whole United States, okay, or what was shaping into the United States, the rebellious colonists said, "We don't want white British rule." Now there were some colonists that said, "We do." They were called the loyalists, okay, and then the others were called the patriots. So the white people and who were British subjects, who were sent here to kill the Indians and take over the land, okay, and everybody else, were broke into two groups. There was a loyalist, loyal to the British crown, and there were those folks who were the patriots, all right? And the patriots fought for independence from Britain, okay? And they fought against both soldiers from Britain who were part of the loyalists and any other of those people who were loyal to the British crown. That's what the Revolutionary War was. Got it?
Yes.
Okay. All right. You got it, Allie? You got it, your mouse?
Allie.
Okay. So, now, if you're a British colony, then Britain sets up certain things for you to run. The crown provides the money for the jails. You know, now they tax you and all of that, but basically, that whole government setup has been set up because you are a colony of Britain. Okay? Now you declare independence, fight the war, and win, and so you are no longer a colony of Britain. And the British crown is not going to provide money for an army, for example. Money for roads.
User in your channel is recording.
Okay? So you have to pay for that. So the colonists, which were the patriots, who are now Americans, go through hard times economically.
User in your channel is recording.
You got a lot of war, stuff that you got to deal with, you know, during war, you know, it's not productive, you know, a lot of things are destroyed, bridges are burned, roads are messed up, blah, 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 okay? So you got to build again, okay? Now building independently. The people who fought the patriots were often the farmers and the working class people, then as now, right? Who fought? You think George Bush's son go to war?
Daddy.
No, you go. I go. Okay. So the farmers went to, you know, were the battle, and so the government, because it was depressed, had not paid the farmers what. Their compensation from fighting in the war. But the war was over, and the elite who were left in the country, who stayed, you know, who owned the land, who had rented it to the farmers, or who had sold it to the farmers, and the farmers were making mortgage payments, says, "I'm sorry, Jabbar didn't pay his debt. I want his farm." So they're going to foreclose on the farm. The farmer said, wait a minute. This is unfair. First of all, we ain't been paid by the government. Okay. And so we can't pay you. And now you're going to have a court that's going to enforce a foreclosure under these circumstances of economic depression and us not being paid. Hold up with that. And so they started to rebel against the courts and others. Got it?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So you got the numbers now. 1776 to declare independence. 1777, you got the Continental Congress. Okay. Starting in the 1780s, because the war is over in 83. Okay. But, all right, Jabari, come on.
I was just asking, who were the farmers supposed to be paying that they couldn't pay because they weren't paid for the war? That's the only question.
The landowners, the people who sold them the land. So if you buy a farm, okay,
you buy a farm from a rich landowner, right? That rich landowner sells you a farm, okay, and you're farming. And you have to pay your mortgage payment on the farm, right?
Right.
Okay. Because, you see, there weren't just all the rich people who left the landowners that were British. Many of them stayed. But remember the loyalists, they were loyal to the British Crown. Some stayed, some left. But even the patriots had class. All the patriots weren't just poor. Okay? So you had the landowners. All right? And the landowners, and these folks had debts. Hold on just a second. I'm on baby duty right now. Yes, love.
Microphone muted. User disconnected from your channel. Microphone activated.
All right, I'm black. Okay, so you got the Continental Congress in 1777, the Articles of Confederation, because folks like we declared independence in 1776, but we got to figure out how we're going to run ourselves, okay, and how we're going to raise money to fight this war with these British, okay, and all that. And so that's the Continental Congress in 1777, all right, and the Articles of Confederation, all right? And that's what Jabari put the first. Is Articles of Confederation. There was a Continental Congress, and with that Congress, boom, you had the Articles of Confederation. Now, starting in the 1780s, when folks aren't being paid, you begin to have debtor rebellions, okay, particularly in 1786, where you have Daniel Shea, and the courts were being used to force Daniel Shea and others, okay, to pay money. And they were veterans from the War of Independence. But they hadn't been paid, okay? And so the elite were really bent out of shape by this rebellion and said now they want to form in 1787, okay? All right, so we got 76 independence, we got 77, you got the Continental Congress and the Articles of Confederation. 10 years later, you have the Constitutional Convention, and at that Constitutional Convention, they wanted to give the government power to protect property in the interest of the elite over the poor. All right, so they set up protection against majority economic interest, okay, because the first Articles of Confederation was more democratic. And so, but they needed to now say, we got to change from these Articles of Confederation. Because the elite don't have power to protect our property over the poor.
All right.
Got it? This is what I want you to understand. When we say this manipulation of the elite of the economy, I want you to know, just have a historical context. I want you to, you got 2008, but I don't want you to get a sense that, oh, that's very different than how America really had it. No, this was the very beginning of America and a class struggle between the poor and the elite. Okay? So, in Philadelphia in 1787, then you framed the Constitution. All right? And a key framer of that Constitution was a person called James Madison. All right? All right. Now, this is a last little piece that you'll need to know, okay? So, Philadelphia, that's why you got Philadelphia, okay, in the history of the United States. Constitutional Convention, all right, 1787. And that's when folks came out with what we have now as the Constitution of the United States. And look at what James Madison said. The primary goal, do you see that part right there? It's the spelling is messed up because I was taking notes fast. Allie, would you read that where it says the quote from James Madison? Allie, are you present? All right, Ty, will you read it? Ty, don't pretend not to be present. Come on, come on, come on, come on. You just came in. Give me something.
Can you hear me?
Yes, very good. Read.
James Madison formulated the...
Should be Constitution. Should be Constitution.
Okay, James Madison formulated the Constitution. Wanted to overcome the tyranny of the majority.
Tyranny.
The primary goal of...
Hold on. The tyranny of the majority.
Okay, sorry.
Okay.
The tyranny of the majority. The primary goal of government.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is to ensure that the humans are protected from the majority, so that the wealth, the most responsible set of men, would control the nation. The Senate. Least represented, the wealth of the nation will be in charge.
Okay, so let's break this down. The tyranny of the majority. What do you think that is, Allie? Are you back?
So this is a quote from him?
This is a quote from James Madison, okay? The tyranny of the majority. Got to protect. So you got the farmers, and it wasn't just, you know, so it was from South Carolina. This wasn't just Massachusetts. This was from South Carolina all the way to Boston, Massachusetts. Okay? No. Allie, can't hear you. So, welcome, Kadir. So you have the belief of the framers of the Constitution was that the majority was tyrannical. Okay?
What does that mean?
Tyranny is oppression. Tyranny is, well, let's look it up. Let's look up what you come up with, tyranny. Come on, first one, get it. What do you got? Read it.
I'm looking.
Form oppressive government or rule.
Very good. I'm just also put in text chat. Usually thought of as cruel and oppressive, and often is, but the original definition of the was ruled by persons who lack legitimacy, whether they be malign or benevolent. Okay. So the majority, he was against rule by the majority. Okay.
So the majority was considered tyrannic?
Right. Tyrannical. Okay. That is, in his mind, And this is important because this is the belief about people, okay? These are the assumptions built in. That is, the belief about people is that you have a small group of people who had to rule over the majority, that the majority were tyrannical, okay, and could never govern. And the government and who's in charge had to be a small group of elite, okay? And so... then you shape the Constitution, all right? And he says the primary goal of government is to ensure that the opulent, that's another vocabulary word. What is opulent? Look it up. Opulent, two P's.
Okay.
Come on, Ty, look it up. Jump in the game. Sister, I'm glad you read. Welcome, Kadira. I'll jump in the game.
Ostentatiously rich and luxurious or lavish. Well,
it should be ostentatious, isn't it? Ostentatiously?
And ostentatiously.
Okay. And what does that mean?
I'm actually looking at it now.
There you go. So if you get one word, it gives you another word, you gotta look it up. There are other synonyms right there in that same place, your mind, that will give you a bit more. Like one is ostentatiously rich and luxurious or lavish, wealthy, and this is what we would call today super rich, okay, who flaunts it. So a person is ostentatious when they are trying to flaunt their riches. Got it?
Got it.
All right. All right, so back to the statement. So you might as well read the primary goal of government is to ensure that the super rich are projected from the majority. So that the wealth, the most responsible set of men, because women were not even considered and didn't have the right to vote at this time, okay, among white folks. That's not true among Africans. The most responsible set of men would control the nation. Okay? And your modern is flashy, flashy, rich flashy, because you could be poor and flashy. Anyway, all right. So, so there's that's the idea about government. So now, how does that get laid out in terms of the government? You see that part that Ty read, the Senate, the least representative. How are who controls government? The House of Representatives or the Senate? What are the three different parts of government? This government that you're operating under in America.
Is one of them the bank?
Nope, they're not. The banks influence everything right now. But no, you're talking about the forms of government. You got the House of Representatives, you got the Senate, and then you have the executive branch or the presidency. All right? That's the government. You are elect people to become representatives in the House of Representatives, and then you elect people to be in the Senate, and then you have the president. Now, the House of Representatives is based on population. All right, so if you got more population in the state, you have more houses of more representatives in Congress. Right? That's called Congress, House of Representatives. Right? Y'all, come on, stay with me now. If you don't know, don't be shy. Just say, tell me that again or I'll understand it. I don't care what you've learned in the past or haven't learned. This is not a test. This is, but still to understand the elite manipulation of the economy, I don't want you to think that this, what you see in 2008, is some strange thing. It's just another manifestation of what was of an issue that's been a part of the United States from the very beginning. Okay. All right, so cool. Great, Gerard. All right, so now you got the House of Representatives is more representatives because people can elect folks. The Senate, there are two people from every state, regardless of size, who will be elected to the Senate. Now, here's what I want you to do a little bit of research for me here, and that is how many, what were the qualifications in order to run for the presidency, in order to be president? To run for president, what were the qualifications? What were the requirements? And in order to run to be a senator, to run for Senate, what were the qualifications? And
at a certain time?
And 1777. Well, 1787, right around the time we're talking, between 1777 and 1787. Okay, Allie, then make sure you type. If your microphone's not working, then type. Ty, get in the game, sister. You know, I expect for you to bring something, you know, find something. Ty, are you on your computer?
Yes.
Good. Then look up and find something and put what you find in the text chat as well. Tadira, you with us?
Yes.
All right.
No person except a natural born citizen or a citizen of the United States at the time of adoption of the Constitution shall be eligible for to the office of president. Neither shall any be eligible to that office who shall not have attained to the age of 35 years and been 14 years of resident within the United States.
That it? So that means you type very good. You mind you saying you have to be a resident for 14 years in the United States, be a citizen, you know, here, and be 30 years old, or did it say 33?
35.
Okay. Were there any land qualifications?
Well, now I know that there are, since he mentioned it, so I'm going to look.
I don't know, maybe so.
What did you say? You broke
up. Were there any land qualifications? Were there things that would prevent? See, since James Madison was trying to have to make sure that the elite maintained control. One way to maintain control is to have free and open elections, but just have qualifications that it makes it unlikely that anybody, except for a handful of people, can meet.
You mean learn as in if he lives in this particular place, you cannot do this, or you can do this?
I'm sorry, you have to slow it down for my old ears.
When you mean learn, were you saying if you live in this particular place, you cannot or can do this?
Well, sometimes, for example, when we studied last year, in the South, you had to own a certain amount of land in order to qualify to run for Senate. Okay. And so it may not be. We'll come back to it. I was thinking of what you could find. During the colonial time, the right to vote for the lower house, which they call it, only people who had freehold landed property sufficient to ensure that they were personally independent and had a vested interest in the welfare of the communities could vote. That means if you didn't own land, you couldn't vote. That's under the British system. Just wanted to know whether or not that continued into it. Don't worry about it. We'll come back to it. Now, Allie, the problem with what you have found here, does it state historically? Okay, because qualification needs to become a U.S. senator. Is that now or does that, I'm just pulling it up so I haven't seen it. Does that give it to you in terms of how it was in 1787? Okay, so, you know, pay attention. Everything is within a particular context. Okay, we're trying to find out there at that time in order for you to run for Senate. Were there any particular, or president, were there any particular things that would restrict common people from running? Okay, let it go. All right, we'll come back to that later on, all right? Just know that James Madison and put this word in, James Madison and the people who met in in Philadelphia were called Federalists. Incidentally, that was a closed meeting. Okay. Although it was a constitutional convention to create the Constitution of the United States. And the next thing it had to be was ratified. Okay.
All right. Can you repeat the word?
Yes, the Federalist. Here, I put it right there. And he wrote the Federalist Papers, but they were called Federalist. Okay. And we won't get into John Jay and all those folk right now, but just know, remember James Madison, who was the primary writer of the Constitution. Okay, everybody, I mean, other folks ratified or went on with it, okay? Or the people who were in at the meeting in 1787, okay? That's 17. Now, 1777, there was a convention, but that's not the same as the Constitution. There was a Continental Congress in 1777. That's 1 year after the Declaration of Independence, okay? That's the Continental Congress. Then, 8-10 years later, after Shays' Rebellion and many other people rebelling against their houses being foreclosed on, all right, you then have in 1787, you have the Continental, you have the Constitutional Convention. Don't get them mixed up. They're close. One produces the Constitution, the other, the first one produces the Articles of Confederation. All right? Which was more democratic? This is just a review from what we just said. Which was more democratic, the Articles of Confederation or the Constitution?
The Articles.
That's right. The Articles of Confederation. That's what was produced in 1777. And because they're fighting, right? And they're trying to raise an army. And so they're saying, listen, if we're going to be free of Britain, then here's the kind of government we're going to have. Equal Italian government, not just the people who got the money being in charge. And everybody would say, yeah, I'm for that. I'll fight for that. And then after the war is won in 1787, the elite says, oh, wait a minute, we don't have enough protection. And so at the Constitutional Convention, then you produce the U.S. Constitution. All right, and that is where you have James Madison and what other folks saying, no, we need to make sure that the wealth are in charge, okay? And the wealthy were supposed to be these benevolent folks who are going to take care of humanity. All right, now, only problem, they got to get this bad boy ratified. How many states, roughly, you got? They got to get this. There were 13 colonies, right?
User in your channel timed right. out.
Okay, 13 original colonies, so these you got 13 basic states, okay? And the states had a lot of power. The federal government didn't have as much power, okay? In the sense of, you know, versus the states. And so that's why they were called the Federalists. They wanted to concentrate more power in the federal government than the state. They now had to get this ratified. Do y'all understand what ratification means?
User entry.
Yeah.
Okay. Then once you have a constitutional convention and you have what's proposed to be changed, it has to be like in your state, whether you are Georgia, Kentucky, New York, wherever, the legislature can propose something. And then it has to be voted on, okay, by the population. Well, when there's something that's going to be dictating for the whole nation, all the states have to sign on to it. I know you didn't ask, did you miss anything? Please don't ask that no more. Yamazin, did you write, did I miss anything right?
I mean, I'm missing anything that I really, really need to know because my internet just cut off for a second.
I hear. Try. What did I miss?
What did I miss?
See, to say, did you miss it? If we say no, that means we were doing nothing.
I just mean something I really, really
I know you didn't mean. I'm just saying what's there. I'm just giving you my response. So I think what you're trying to say is what did I miss? Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I mean, so... Imagine, I don't know. Just hang with it and ask questions. Right now, we are this United States Constitution has been written up in Philadelphia in 1787 and now has to go out to the states. So what happened? The states insist that there's something to make it more democratic and less elitist. And it's called the Bill of Rights. And it was ratified that next year, June. Okay. But in order for it to be ratified, folks had to find. All right. So everybody look up the Bill of Rights and find one. Okay. Here you go. Here's a simplified version. Click on that link.
It's loading.
Thank you, Kudira. Many things that we know of and value as a part of the U.S. Constitution were not included in 1787 by the elite. They were forced on the elite by the farmers and those in the states. You got it? Is it up?
Thomas.
Jabari, read the first two. Allie, your mic is not working. So, Kadira, read the next two. Ty, read the next two. And Jabari, I said Jabari starting with, right? So then, and then we'll rotate on back around.
Okay, so, first bill, 1971. Congress must protect the right to vote.
1971? I was in college.
okay. I misread it. He's blocking over too fast. 1791.
There you go.
Congress must protect the rights of freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, freedom of petition, and freedom of religion. Second bill, 1791 as well. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state and the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
All right. So you've heard those before in some form, right? Mm-hmm. And you identify those with that's what America is. Well, that's not what the elite believes America was. Okay. At the same time, that's what was pushed in order to get this new constitution passed. Okay. All right. Come on. Kadira, the next two.
Okay, the third bill, 1791. The government cannot send soldiers to live in private homes without the permission of the owners. Fourth bill, also in 1791. The government cannot get a warrant to arrest a person or search their property unless there is probable cause to believe a crime has been committed.
Very good. So those unlawful search and seizure, if there's not a probable cause. So literally, a person can't just, I'm going to break in your house and see if I can find something, you know, unless there is some probable cause, you know, then it's against the Constitution for that to be done. Okay. And soldiers can't come and just take over your house and just say, we're going to take it over. Live here. Forget you. Okay. That's against the Constitution. All right. These are amendments to the Constitution. Very good. Keep on reading. Who's next? Ty?
Fifth bill, 1791. The government cannot put a person on trial for crime until a grand jury has written an indictment.
Indictment.
I'm sorry, indictment. A person cannot be put on trial twice for the same crime. The government must follow due process of law before punishing a person or taking their property. A person on trial for crime does not have to testify against themselves in court.
All right, very good. One more.
Sixth bill, also in 1791. The person is accused of a crime. The person who is accused for a crime should get a speedy trial by a jury. That person can have a lawyer during the trial. They must be told what they are charged with. The person can question the witness against them and can get their own witness to testify.
All right. Excellent. All right. So these are common things, right, that we assume are part of the U.S. Constitution, right? And they are now. I mean, they are because people pushed them to be, not because the framers of the Constitution wanted them to be. And still, it still is an elitist document. Okay. These make it less elitist. Okay. All right. All right. Yamazi, take your two.
And 1791, a jury trial is needed for civil cases. 8th Bill, also in 1791, the government cannot require excessive bail or fines or any cruel, unusual, and unusual punishment.
All right, and I'll take the last two. The listing of individual rights in the Constitution and Bill of Rights does not include all of the rights of the people and the states. Okay. Any powers that the Constitution does not give to the United States belong to the states and the people. I'm reading that again. Any power that the Constitution does not give to the United States belongs to the state and the people. This does not include powers that the Constitution says the states cannot have. All right. All right. So there you have a short version of the constitutional amendments that were necessary in order to get this elitist document, okay, passed out. And we'll come back to the qualifications, but basically the whole notion of the Federalist was to have more control that would protect the wealthy against the poor. Okay. All right. I'm done with that lesson. Everybody got that? Any questions? Yamazin, you checked out in terms of your internet. So do you have any questions at this point?
No, I think I'm good.
All right. So can y'all tell me back what I just told you? What we just went through
in this class?
Huh? Can you tell me now?
The short version of what you just said, or the class?
No, the whole class that we've covered so far.
We were talking about what happened in between the Declaration of Independence signing and the Constitution. So we talked about the Revolutionary War. Brief conversation about how Africans fought on both sides because we were told that we would not... that we would be given freedom if we did. Then I have the United States, which splits into several cells that say the Patriots, the Loyalists, the farmers, landowners, government, and the elite. Patriots says they fought against the British soldiers and Loyalists. They were loyal to America. Loyalists fought against Patriots and colonists. They were loyal to the British. Farmers fought in the war and were not compensated for fighting in the war. On top of being in economic depression, they were angered by the lack of compensation, and they couldn't pay the landowners who sold them land. They couldn't pay their mortgage to the landowners, so they rebelled. Landowners...
They didn't rebel because they couldn't pay them. They rebelled because the landowners started to use the courts to foreclose to take their property.
Oh, okay.
You see, they would have said, fine, we know it's a young nation, you'll pay me back, when you can. In the meantime, I'm going to use the farm to keep making money, and I'll pay taxes on that, But the landowner said, no, you owe me, so we want the money. And if you don't give me the money, we're going to take the land. And the homeowner says, well, it's unfair. We haven't been compensated, and everything is in a depression. Like, let's work this thing together a little bit. And they said, no, we want the land. And that's when they were using the courts to throw people off the land. They were using courts to foreclose in a situation that was unfair, if not illegal.
So the landowners went to... So they couldn't pay the mortgage to the landowners, so the landowners went to court and took the farmer's land.
To court, that's right. So the court would say, we're using the government power to take your land.
Okay.
Now,
so
same thing. Wait a minute. Just going so you get how what the connection is. In 2008, the economy put a tailspin. Many people out of work, no fault of their own, because of the rich folks' manipulation of the economy and all that stuff like that. So folks are out of work, can't pay the mortgage. The banks, who are the owners of the property, including the house that I'm living in, go and say, we want your house. And many people say, wait a minute, I'm just work with me a little bit. You know, I'll be back on my feet. You know, this is the economy that's bad. You know, work with me, reschedule the debt. And so I'll pay a little bit for these years. Then as I get myself back together, then I'll catch up. And the bank said no, and they sent to the courts. And they sat on the courthouse steps and said, your house is foreclosed on. Bam, and they will send the people out to throw you out your house. And that's what happened. 2008.
Oh, wow.
Okay? And that's what happened in 1780s, you know. All right? And so they rebelled. All right.
So next I have landowners, which says the landowners had debts and they were trying to pay for the resources needed for the war. I think that's incorrect. Is it correct?
No. I mean, everybody, the whole country were having to pay for the debts, not the landowners. Everybody's having to pay for whoever said we're part of shaping this new government is responsible for collectively paying taxes and paying off debt, you know, from the war. How come, Yamazin? Why the question?
I just wanted to know so I can prepare myself for tomorrow.
Assume that you are.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Okay, so, yeah, the landowners had debts. The whole country had debts. Okay, I'm just going to fix that.
Yeah, see, so basically it was a depression. So don't worry about that part of the landowners had debts. The whole country was indebted, and it was an economic depression after the war. Okay? Because you were building a new country. Just like if you started off on your own. Okay? You don't start off wealthy. If you leave your parents' house, even if you plan for it, whatever, you got a whole lot of debts that you didn't have to pay before. Okay? So there was economic depression. That's all that is about.
So then can I say that the landowners, because of this depression, were cracking down on late mortgages and all that stuff?
Yes, they were. And it was unfair, though. You know, it may have been legal, but it was unfair because you just come out of a war and these same people were responsible for winning the war and hadn't been adequately compensated as veterans. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
And if they hadn't fought, the British would own everything from these landowners. So while it was legal, it was unfair. Right? Yeah, I'm understand that? Okay, go ahead.
One second, I got to update that one.
Okay. All right, you're doing great. I'm glad you're taking excellent notes. I'm going to I'll move on just for the sake of time. And the key part is you should be able to, in addition to what Jabari is saying, you should be able to go from 1776, you should know that date, 1777, Continental Congress, and the adoption of the Articles of Confederation, which was more egalitarian. I don't mean it was egalitarian. It was just more democratic document than what came in 1787 at the Constitutional Convention, which is the U.S. Constitution, okay? And then that Constitution was in order to be ratified, that Constitution was the citizens forced on it through debate and other stuff like that, the Bill of Rights. And notice all of them was in 1791. So that June 1787, you can ignore that. So the Bill of Rights ratification, and then that's what we have now as a U.S. Congress. Now, all right, let's move on. Because you got the beginning of this struggle of the elite, the mindset that the elite are supposed to control the masses, and the masses are not supposed to have power, because the masses will become tyrannical. Everybody with me on that?
What does tyrannical mean?
Have them out. Whoever looked that up before, we went through it. What is tyrannical? What's tyrannical?
Tyranny.
Go.
Cool and cruel and oppressive government or rule.
All right.
Thank you.
And originally, if you saw the definition, it originally just meant rule by the majority. So literally, they made rule by the majority equal tyranny. Ugh. Anyway, let's go. So you got that mindset. Now we're going to leave 1787. But right, at 1787, you're only, what, 15, 12 years from the new century, right?
Right.
Okay, so that is, you got 1787, and, you know, in, what, 13 years? Is now 1900s. All right, so now this is going to go to the part of the manipulation. Psychology. And so there's a connection between one and the other. Okay, but then now we're going to slide into some of the early psychology of it. Okay, you got some of it. Here's some more. Okay. So under that section, in 1914, okay, because you already know that you're only 13 years out, so you certainly hear 1914. What happens is there is the a person named Lippmann. Put it here. You heard of Bernays, right? You remember him?
Right.
Okay. Add to it Lippmann, Ivy, and then Bernays. Okay? Bernays comes after these two. All right? So you have this Leblow massacre. Let's see if you can look up Ludlow, Ludlow.
You say it's a city in Kentucky.
Ludlow Massacre. If you look up Ludlow Massacre, you will probably not get all those.
Okay.
What are the first names of Lippmann and Ivy?
Ivy Lee, actually. It's either Ivy Lee or Lee Ivy. And I'll get to Lippmann. I don't remember him right off the top. Okay, so let's put it in context now. And so, see, you have now gone from the Revolutionary War in 1787. I mean, the Declaration of Independence 1776 and all that. To now, you got this elitist document modified a little bit by the Bill of Rights. Okay, and so now you got the Ludlow Massacre. This was an attack by the Colorado National Guard and the Colorado Fuel and Iron Company camp guards on a tent colony of 1,200 striking coal miners and their families at Ludlow, Colorado, April 20th, 1914. Okay? They said two dozen. Actually, it's about 50-some people, including miners, their wives and children, were killed. Okay, so now we've got the class struggle again. That's the consistent piece that you have. The elite versus the working class. And we ain't talking about black folks in the main. Okay? Ludlow, Colorado, we're talking about white folks. All right? And we're talking about poor working miners for the most part. There may have been some black people. For the most part, you're talking about white working class people working in the mines in terrible conditions. And this Colorado Fuel and Iron Company actually was controlled by Rockefeller. Okay? John D. Rockefeller. And so these folks went on strike in February of October. Anyway, so they lasted all through the winter. They made tents. They refused to go to work in the mines unless they had better conditions. reminds you of Shay's rebellion. In this case, though, we said these are terrible working conditions. We're not going to work there. Okay? And they call out the National Guard. And the National Guard start to shoot these folks for being on strike. To break the strike.
This is psychology and economics.
This is the bridge between those two. Okay? Because the key thing is there is a belief among the elite and in many cases among poor people, because we bought it. Television teaches it to us and we bought it. That a small group of smart people and wealthy people should run the world. And the masses certainly aren't capable of doing that. Only the smart people can, and the elite and the landowners, okay? And they should control things. So now you have an example of that where the elite are running this coal mine. John D. Rockefeller, the owner of the Colorado, the major owner in the Colorado Fuel and Iron Company, and they call out the National Guard as well as their camp guards, and they open fire because these folks will continue to strike, which means these folks aren't making money. The elite aren't making money. And instead of negotiating and coming up with better wages and better conditions, they fire on them. Now, what does this got to do with the psychology? Because after the Ludlow massacre, John D. Rockefeller has an image problem, doesn't he? Wouldn't you think if someone was the owner of the company and the company fired on these folks like that, wouldn't you think that there might be protests against that? Wouldn't you think the person who's the owner would have an image problem? Well, at least he did.
Yes.
Okay. So, he was the scum of the earth. People were like protesting all over. Okay. All over. Against John D. Rockefeller. And John D. Rockefeller, of course, was just as a symbol, okay, right, of protesting against the rich and the elite. Right? So same as Shay's Rebellion in the sense that you got this protesting. All right. So John D. Rockefeller hired this guy named Ivy Lee. Click on the link right there.
It's loading. This one.
All right, so it's loading.
I'm there.
Would you, Jabbar, would you read the first two paragraphs?
Yes. Ivy Lee is the father of modern public relations, a.k.a. PR. Oh, for real?
See, he didn't call it PR, but he literally was the father of it. Even before. So he and Lippmann were before Bernays. Bernays took it to another level. But go ahead. You'll see some similarities. Come on.
Okay. He was the father of public relations. He was a business reporter for the New York World, Joseph Pulitzer's newspaper. He quit his reporting job to run election campaigns. After that, he opened a public relations firm. The biggest welcoming into PR in Lee's career was in 1906. Coal mine owners wanted to be publicized, so they basically hired Lee to advise them. After Lee had suggested that they talk to the press and about getting publicity, they wanted to be publicized because their workers were on strike, and the workers had already started talking to reporters about the reasons why they were on strike. The mine owners didn't even want to talk to the president at the time, Theodore Roosevelt, who wanted to help solve the issue.
All right, the next two paragraphs. Ty. Kadira.
John D. Rockefeller Jr. was one of the stubborn coal mine owners who refused to speak with the president. He is also the son of the man who founded the Standard Oil Company. Lee officially worked for him in 1914 when he needed it most because the Rockefeller family became incredibly hated. They were kind in donating to orphanages and churches, but were cruel to their coal miners. The Colorado miners had to work in dangerous conditions with minimal pay, which could barely support their families. These miners became angry in 1913 and went on a strike, demanding more money and safer working conditions. They were kicked out of their company-owned houses after being on strike for several months. So the miners decided to live in tents, which the company's guards shot down and lit on fire. 40 people were killed and 100 were wounded. This was known as the Ludlow Massacre.
Ludlow. And the picture to the right has the tents. Okay. Now notice in this edition, they leave out, what do they leave out in that last two sentences that Kadira read? The one that says, so the miners decide to live in tents, which the company guards shot down and lit on fire. What's missing?
I'm not sure.
Neither am I.
The National Guard. The National Guard is the armed forces. Okay? So how does the Army of the United States or a portion of the Army come to go and shoot at because private workers are on strike? You got it? It's the elite control of the government. So, you know, just as in with the Shays, so that there was a debt that wasn't paid, but when you then go to court and you then start sending people to jail and other things like that, because they couldn't pay the debt and take on their land using the force of the armies, now you have government entities working on behalf of private interests. Elite private interests. Unfair private interests. Y'all see that?
Yes.
And that's missing. This account just says the company's guards shot down. Okay, this is why you must not take any one source. Okay, and you must know who's telling the story and from what angle they're telling the story. All right. So the point is, what Lee Ivey began to do is he went and started spreading lies that actually the women didn't get burned. The reason the tents caught on fire is because they knocked over the some stoves that they made knocked over. Okay, so he put, like Bernays was to do later on, he put stories into the media that were lies, that told a different, what we would call a different spin, basically a lie. Okay, now lying is not ingenious. Lying is diabolical. Okay? It's all there is to it. And so that's what he began to do. And you see some links there, some important lessons in PR. And again, it wasn't called PR at that time. All right? That name PR was to, public relations, was to begin to be used by Bernays. Okay? That's why Bernays is also called the father of public relations. All right? It's just that one of the earliest use of the of publicity consciously to manipulate the masses was done by Lee Ivey, okay, Ivy Lee, in this case of trying to make the Rockefeller family seem like they were good people, so that's that. Also, these lessons are not true, okay? That is, he found the goal of PR was no longer fool the public. Well, it's not true because he actually put out stories that were not true there. Okay. But in terms of if you're going to advocate for it, you says, okay, don't try to stiff the public, have a relationship with the public. And so if you're going to have a relationship with the public, then you hire public relations folks who will manage that relationship with the public. Got it? And managing that relationship with the public is, let's tell a story about how much money you give to the orphanages, you know. And so we're going to give. So let's, you had a photo op of him, of Rockefeller Jr. going down and dressing up like a miner and taking a pickaxe and having a photograph of his joining the miners. You think that was anything other than a photo op? Not at all. Okay. He didn't live there. He didn't improve the conditions, all of that. But anyway, so that's Ivy Lee. Following Ivy Lee was Lippmann. And then to take it to another level, was Bernays. Okay. All of them operating on the same theory as James Madison. And that is, you have to have the small group of elite running the country. Now, just because of the time, I'm going to shorten some stuff up and we'll do some more later. But with Bernays and what we talked about in terms of what was happening in the country where, you remember when we talked about you used to get your affirmation from your productivity, your sense of worth from what you produced. Y'all remember that class?
Yes.
Now, if you don't, y'all say no, okay? Gadira says no. Ty, do you remember the class? Ty, you got to talk to me or type. Or else you can just go home, okay? I got to know that you're in the game. You know, I've let you sit for a long time, and you got to be in the game or just bye, okay? So do you remember that class, Ty?
No, I don't.
Okay, thank you. I don't have to call on you like that anymore, okay? You type or you talk or you communicate with it, all right? All right, so short version. I think, Jabari, you said you remember. What do you remember?
Wait. Which class was it again?
Okay. You remember? Let me just be sure, because I got to let you go. It was a class about Henry Ford and the assembly line and the country moving from agrarian and from craftsman to assembly line production. Y'all got that? You remember that?
Remember that.
Okay. So right around this time here, folks, you had the level of the population had not grown much in the century, but the productivity had grown tremendously. And so folks had a lot of goods they had to get rid of, and they began to have the assembly line and this kind of mechanism. So if you made a dress, Jabari, if you made music, you do. And Kadira, if you made cupcakes, and you do. And Ty, I don't know what, Ty, what do you like to make?
Lasagna.
Okay. If Ty had a lasagna restaurant, and she produced lasagna, then all of you would be affirmed if people were buying your music and playing it, people were buying your cupcakes and loving them, people were couldn't wait to get to your restaurant, and Allie, I made it up that you were sewing and your dresses were what president wives love to wear. Now, that is, you get the affirmation, these praise beam touches, based on your production, right? You begin to feel good about yourself and worthy based on your production. Annie or Debbie?
Right.
All right. And that's how the mechanics were and the craftsmen who built things. But now you create assembly lines. And so when you have an assembly line building a car or a chair or even making a dress or even making lasagna, who can take credit for building the car when it comes off an assembly line?
The people who assembled it.
Everybody.
Nobody.
Oh.
Because nobody made the dress.
Nobody made the cupcakes. If your cupcakes are on the assembly line and one person just squirts the little, when it comes across them, they squirt little, they sprinkle sprinklers on it. That's all they do. That's all they know how to do. They sprinkle sprinklers on it. Are they the maker of the cupcake?
Debbie.
If I screw the bolt in, am I the, you know, if I package the CD, that's all I do. Package your CD, Jabari. Comes across the line, I package it. Am I the maker of the music?
No.
No. Now, the person who used to make it, the affirmation, the praise being touches that we would get from producing were now being replaced by having what we had. Okay? And so folks then began the manipulation. And so we move from a democracy of citizens. Now, this is the part I want you to type down, and we'll come back to it. Instead of a democracy of citizens were the most important thing was who was being elected and what were the policies to become a democracy of consumers. So we measure our right, our freedom, by what we can buy. I can buy anything I want to buy. I can go in any restaurant I want to come. It's a free country. Never mind that the election is rigged. You see, because citizens are focused on how they're being represented. Consumers are based on what they can consume. So you get a freedom and a democracy of consumption instead of a democracy of citizenship. And that's what Bernays and them were doing. And that's the stage, that sets the stage for what we will continue in terms of the psychology and the economy. Everybody got it?
Yes.
Is this too deep? Mm-hmm. Too heavy?
No. It's just a lot at once.
Yeah,
break it down.
Break it down. I mean, I'm just doing it because of time. It's important. And Ty, are you getting this?
Yes.
Okay, study the recording. When you come in, if you got it on your computer, record it. All right, I know I've kept you over. We'll go into Rosewood, into that. So these are the three, again, these three areas, we're going back and forth, but keep your notes and them, keep them separate. You'll see how they relate and get deep in them. Please review them so you can ask questions and summarize. Okay, this is the elite manipulation. This is the psychology and economy. This is our economic prowess. All right. Y'all take care. Have a good Friday. Have a good weekend. I'll see you on Monday morning. You will have a quiz, not so much on this, although I may, for those of you who are here, give you a little bit of this, but not much. Most of it is going to be on those two articles from that we covered.
Debasia.
Yay. Take care.
User left your channel. User left your channel. User in your channel stopped recording. User left your channel. User left.